Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Blitz of UFO sightings occurred around the world. First on November 7, 2006, in O'Hare Field in Chicago, where United Airline employees reported a gray ship hovering over a terminal. This was not reported in the media for almost 2 months, and I quote, "In the sky, a bird, a plane, a UFO." This dated January 1, 2007. A flying saucer-like object hovered low over O'Hare International Airport for several minutes before bolting through thick clouds with such intense energy that it left an eerie hole in overcast skies. Officials at United professed no knowledge of the November 7th event, which was reported to the airline by as many as a dozen of its own workers, when the Tribune started asking questions recently about a mysterious elliptical-shaped craft sitting motionless over Concourse C of the United Terminal. And from another, FAA blames UFO report on weird weather. This dated January 2, 2007. Federal officials say it was probably just some weird weather phenomenon, but a group of United Airline employees swear they saw a mysterious, saucer-shaped craft hovering over O'Hare Airport in November. The workers, some of them pilots, said the object didn't have lights and hovered over an airport terminal before shooting up through the clouds. The FAA acknowledged that the United supervisor had called the control tower at O'Hare, asking if anyone had spotted the spinning disc-shaped object. But the controllers didn't see anything, and a preliminary check of radar found nothing out of the ordinary. End of the quotes. This hit news on CNN. Show host Beck interviewing the Chicago Tribune reporter Hilkovich and Dolan, a UFO expert, and I quote, Beck, "Now listen to this story, because this is an actual news story. This isn't like out of the weekly news report. Chicago O'Hare Airport recently, the United Airlines employees claim they observed a flying saucer-like object hovering low over the terminal for several minutes before bolting through thick clouds with such ferocity that it actually left like a creepy hole in the cloud skies overhead. So what was it? A hoax? An alien attack? Were they observing us? Is this a military operation? What was it?" Joining us now is UFO historian Richard Dolan and the guy who actually broke the story. His name is John Hilkovich. He's from Chicago and the Chicago Tribune. John, let me start with you. The UFO witnesses in Chicago, they're not just nuts, are they? They're like really fine, upstanding people. Hilkovich. And they're very serious about this. They're all United Airline employees, ranging from pilots to supervisors, who heard chatter about this on the radio and raced out and saw it in the sky. Aircraft mechanics, veterans of O'Hare who have been there for a long time, know how lights can play tricks in the sky, and they say this wasn't that. This was a real metallic gray object, low in the sky, and they want answers. I went to the FAA and they said they have no reports at all of this. I put in a Freedom of Information Act request, and they got back to me several days later, saying that, in reviewing the communication tapes at O'Hare, they did come across chatter involving this object, and that a United supervisor contacted the FAA manager in the tower and asked if they, the controllers, had seen anything unusual. Also, United Airlines told me that they had no reports of this, even though the fact is that they were interviewing up to a dozen employees who reported observing this, asking them to write reports and draw pictures. After my story broke on Monday, United said, we have been talking to these employees. Dolan. They're embarrassed to come out and say that. Oh, yes, you know, we've got this UFO hanging out over O'Hare, and we don't know what to do about it. Let's face it, if you're running a large corporation or a bureaucracy, the last thing you want to do is stick your neck out on an issue like this, and so it doesn't surprise me at all. And in fact, this is, again, part of a long history. FAA, as well, has not always been forthcoming over many, many alleged cases. I mean, witnesses have seen these very bizarre things for years and years, and it's tough to get a straight answer out of a lot of government agencies or other corporate bodies. End of the quote from CNN. The Zeta response on the live Zeta Talk weekly chat alluded only to the cover-up and how this was failing. And I quote, "We mentioned in 1995, at the start of Zeta Talk, that sightings would be on the increase, held back only by the anxiety of man. As acceptance increased, sightings would increase. Moving from individual or family sightings to mass sightings, moving from a lack of any documented evidence to unrefutable evidence. In the past, the establishment wanted to deny the alien presence for their own security and stature. Politicians in the church wanted mankind to cling to them as power figures, to look up to them and fear them, and were concerned about loss of stature if the truth about the alien presence were known. Project Blue Book in the U.S., harassment of contactees, and suppression of the media followed. But this campaign has not worked. The public embraces the alien presence eagerly. What will happen to those in the establishment long suppressing the truth if undeniable sightings and perhaps landings with waving and smiling aliens occur? Worse than a loss of stature is the public will be certain that the establishment knew about the alien presence and attempted to keep this information to themselves. The supposed leadership the elite assumes they have over the common man will plummet. Thus, seeing they're being bypassed and the visitors are going directly to the people with great success, such incidents will be in the news, so the establishment can try to claim they too have only recently become aware of it, dragged along in the dust as the thundering crowd rushes to embrace the alien presence." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then a report about a UFO sighting over New York City was mentioned on Fox News during the New Year's Eve celebration, and I quote, "Happy New Year. I was watching the Fox News Network. They were interviewing people after the New Year was run in. One older gentleman made a comment about seeing UFOs coming toward him. Everyone seemed a bit confused by this, and the next host made light of it. I was so hoping there would be a good camera shot of the sky, but saw none. Was there a planned sighting for New York at this time, or was this guy seeing a terrestrial phenomenon related to the New Year's festivities? I was really shocked to hear someone speak of UFOs on national television. I hope many others noticed the comment as well." End of the quote. The Zetas hinted that this was a warning. And I quote, "Where UFO sightings in general are in response to the readiness of the populace for a more conscious awakening, at times they are a signal. We've stated that these UFO blitzes are often accompanied by telepathic information flooded to the populace. This concept, presented in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, does occur and has occurred in the past in the knowledge of man. It is no secret that the St. Lawrence Seaway is spreading, rumpled land all the way inland to the Black Hills. The Niagara substation has more than once been implicated in blackouts affecting vast areas, New York City and all the way back to Detroit. Ohio experiences tremors. All of this are indications that these areas would experience the jumble that stretch zones experience. You are being blitzed and informed to prepare." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then on January 5th in Istanbul, Turkey, and I quote, "People claim seeing a UFO in Istanbul. January 5th, 2007. Mysterious lights seen in Istanbul's skies have baffled people. Witnesses have claimed that the lights were coming from a UFO. People have called news agencies on Wednesday night and reported unidentified white lights flying in the sky. According to the eyewitnesses, the flying object was revolving around itself and blazing. End of the quote. Then from Arkansas on January 9th, where a retired colonel, a highly experienced pilot from the Air National Guard, not only reported sighting glowing orbs but took photos. The media virtually ignored his report. And I quote, Air Force Colonel reports lights not of this world, dated January 17, 2007. Colonel Brian Fields, 61, was cooking chicken in his Van Buren, Arkansas home January 9th, when just before 7 p.m. he observed two intensely bright lights as he looked to the southeast close to the horizon. The retired colonel spent close to 32 years in the military, flying F-16s as a member of the 188th Fighter Wing of the Arkansas Air National Guard. He says the phenomenon lasted an hour and 15 minutes. End of the quote. The Zetas hinted once again that these sightings were a warning. UFOs are often noted hovering over fuming volcanoes or in countries in the Middle East under unrest, likely to escalate. Thus, in some minds, they are appearing to warn or reassure the public in those areas. Where there are many reasons for sightings, mass sightings or well-documented sightings, such as this one in Arkansas, delivering a message of reassurance just ahead of an anticipated disaster is certainly among them. Sightings can be to further the awakening of an individual or small group, or for the broader awakening of a nation or even the world, when well documented and publicized. Sightings have been used to prod the establishment on occasion, causing blackouts or buzzing the White House in decades past. But as the Earth changes heat up and move to result in large quakes and tsunamis and exploding volcanoes, they will increasingly be seen in those areas that will be affected as a warning and reassurance. We are saying to the people of these regions, be aware we exist, that you are not alone. Often telepathic messages are delivered to the people of the region in step with these sightings, relaying this type of message. End of the quote from Zetatov. Then mass sightings continued. South Carolina on January 25th. And I quote, What was that? Strange lights in upstate skies, January 25th, 2007. Dozens of Channel 4 viewers called and emailed us to report seeing some strange blue lights in the night sky. The lights appeared at about 8:15 p.m., according to the reports. A blue light streaked across the sky. The light, moving from the Greenville-Spartanville area toward Huntersville, North Carolina. The object had a bluish-green tail about 2 miles long. Law enforcement agencies also reported receiving calls about the lights. Channel 4 chief meteorologist said the most likely cause is a group of meteors streaking into the Earth's atmosphere. The color could be an indication of the composition of the meteor. He said he was able to confirm there were military helicopters on routine training missions operating in Greenville and Pickens counties on Wednesday night, but there's no indication that those lights are related to the other sightings. End of the quote. Where the South Carolina report indicated a moving blue light, on the same day in North Carolina, these lights were reported to be stationary. And I quote, 911 callers report lights in the sky, January 25th, 2007. Emergency dispatchers around Charlotte handle wacky 911 calls each night, but Wednesday, agencies got the same type of unusual call. A hovering light was in the sky. Others described it as a plane that might be in trouble, a bluish glow, a fire in the sky, a light moving too slow to be a plane. End of the quote. Once again, the Zetas hinted this was more than an awakening sighting. It had a message. And I quote, As we replied earlier in this chat, people are being warned. Those areas where there are UFO blitzes should listen to their subconscious, to see if a message was delivered. Florida and lands abutting are being dragged down. For some lands, there is a cracking point where the rock is snapped so land to the south can drop, land to the north stay at its level. This is often devastating to the surroundings, breaking roadways and bridges and water and gas mains and causing factories to explode. Be warned. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then sightings in Hawaii on January 27th. A father and son, frolicking in the surf, saw the lights approaching and felt they should get out of the surf, and also had the feeling they might not live that long, felt a threat approaching, and I quote, UFOs seen over South Shore sky, January 27, 2007. A National Weather Service says nothing showed up on their radar at the time of the sightings, and the FAA didn't report anything unusual. The U.S. military conducted a missile defense test off Kauai Friday, but the test didn't begin until 7:20 p.m. End of the quote. And the beat goes on in a suburb of London, and I quote, UFO sighting over Islington, London, dated February 2, 2007. Unidentified flying orange objects stopped traffic and left residents staring skyward in disbelief at around 5:30 p.m. Islington police informed Contact International UFO Research about the sightings. Between 12 and 15 orange lights traveling across the sky, then they would stop, and then they went upwards. End of the quote. During this same period, January 2007, the Earth's changes had quickened. On January 8th, there was an Earth fart, stretching ground from Italy through London across the U.S. and over to Australia. A methane stench in dead birds in Austin, Texas and Perth, Australia. Meteors and fireballs were sighted from Colorado to South Africa, and a heavy metal meteorite crashed through a roof in New Jersey. The Zetas had warned that sightings were going to be on the increase. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Sightings to Increase, written July 15, 1995. When the subconscious of the majority of your populace is comfortable with our presence, there will be no need to conceal ourselves from you. Sightings will increase and will include alien life forms. This will then move to telepathic discussions with these life forms, en masse, with groups of people. An increasing number of photos and videos will develop, and these photos and videos will speak to the subconscious of many. Where sightings are on the increase, just where and when they occur depends on many factors, only one of which is the desire of the local inhabitants to experience one. Such sightings as the dramatic Mexico City sightings, seen by thousands and videotaped by hundreds, hasten the awakening by being broadcast and highly authentic. Some sightings in remote locales occur because the majority of the residents are comfortable with the concept of being galactic citizens and ready to experience a sighting without undue anxiety. Some sightings by individuals are like the personalized sign many contactees are given, as encouragement that the path they are set upon is not a foolish one. But likewise, there are areas of the world that receive few sightings, and Muslim countries are included in this list. Where the majority of the humans have been isolated from the gossip that flows freely elsewhere around the world, and have been told that anything outside of the bounds of their tightly controlled world is of the devil, then sightings would do more harm than good. If one cannot see a woman's face, could one be allowed to see a UFO? End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Mass sightings were, however, few and far between. For instance, the 1991 mass sighting in Mexico City during an eclipse, when hundreds of people independently filmed the eclipse and caught more than the eclipse on their home video. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Mexico City, also written September 15, 1995. The initial UFO sightings over Mexico City during the celebrated eclipse were genuine and for obvious reasons. So much anticipation, folks from all over the world, video cameras at the ready to film the eclipse. This was an intentional sighting to press the envelope on the awakening. Since the establishment could not possibly confiscate every video, they chose to counter this undeniable sightings by clamping down on the news. Did the Mexico City UFO flap hit the news? CNN, TV, major newspapers, front page, even the back page? In the main, it was utterly ignored, and not because it wasn't newsworthy. Man not alone. UFOs exist. Undeniable proof. This is not newsworthy. As with the Air Force and pilots in general, reporters have learned that their life is so much simpler if they leave the alien issue alone. Why try to fight a battle you cannot win? Even MUFON is dictated to in this regard. They can only report what is approved. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Another widely publicized mass sighting were the Phoenix Lights in 1997, seen by people from around the state, too large to be a holograph and too distinct to be missed. The hand of the cover-up can be seen here, as the media did not report this sighting for 3 months, an odd delay unexplained by any but the cover-up. And I quote, USA Today, June 20th, 1997. Something happened in the skies over Arizona the night of March 13th. No one is sure what it was, but thousands saw it. Dozens videotaped it, and people all over the state are haunted by it still. A cement truck driver says he was hauling a load down a mountain north of Phoenix when he saw two brilliantly lit orbs shaped like spinning tops. Officials at Luke Air Force Base in nearby Glendale were bombarded with calls for an investigation, even though the U.S. government is officially out of the UFO business. The subject surfaces constantly on talk shows, and the army of people demanding answers has grown to the point that a Phoenix City councilwoman has launched an inquiry. It could have been a hoax. It could have been an illusion. It could have been almost anything. But the events of March 13, 1997 may add up to the most contentious and confounding UFO report since the so-called UFO age was launched 50 years ago by the legendary crash of a spaceship outside Roswell, New Mexico. The sightings come at a time when interest in UFOs borders on a national obsession, saturating the movie industry, television, and literature. A poll this month by CNN and Time magazine found that 22% of adult Americans believe intelligent beings from other planets have been in contact with humans. A Gallup poll last September found that 72% of Americans think there is life on other planets, and 71% said they think the U.S. government knows more about UFOs than it's telling. The event lasted 106 minutes. Some saw orbs, while others saw triangles. By far the most common description, and one captured on video, was that of a V-shaped object. Witnesses agree that, one, it was enormous. The most conservative estimate describes it as 3 football fields long. Computer analysts put it at 6,000 feet, or more than a mile. Two, it made no sound. Three, it moved slowly over Phoenix, cruising at 30 miles per hour. Several times it hovered in place in the sky. End of the quote. For the Zetas, an important point to note is the delay in reporting, a clear clue to a cover-up in action. 3 months later, USA Today covered it, and within hours, ABC, NBC, and CBS began to cover the story. CNN even ran coverage on the sightings on an hour-by-hour. What was holding them back initially? Well, the cover-up, the Zetas explained. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Arizona coverage, written July 15, 1997. The first mass sighting to get full coverage in the media was the large and undeniable alien object seen by thousands in Arizona in March 1997. Distinctive for its size, which could not be mistaken for a satellite or shooting star, this slowly moving and hovering gargantuan ship could only be a mass hysteria or an alien ship. Since the observers did not consult with one another, mass hysteria simply would not fly as an explanation. More remarkable than the sightings and the thousands who observed it was the reaction by the media, which reveals the extent to which the media is controlled on matters of the alien presence. Where windstorms that blow shingles off roofs are reported on the front page, What excuse does the media have for not reporting on a sighting that absolutely proves that the alien presence is real? Lack of witnesses? There were thousands. Lack of credibility? They had videos. A hoax? What could hold a ship the size of several football fields in the air for over an hour? An illusion? The sighting was visible all across the state, and a projected image, one placed against background stars, can fool only those situated at the right angle. All in all, a mass sighting that pleased though producing the extravaganza as much as it pleased the majority of the audience, and one providing a second extravaganza, though one must read between the lines to see it. This second extravaganza is the international cover-up, which has been in place since Roswell and affects all major media outlets, bar none. In stark exception to the normal media reaction to truly newsworthy items, the media became catatonic for 3 months and then found its voice. Please note, world, the best evidence for the cover-up has just been handed you on a platter. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Zetas had warned that the pace of change, the timing for the uptick in sightings, was related to the coming pole shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Lights in the Sky, written October 25th, 2004. We've gone on record at the start of Zeta Talk in 1995 with a statement that sightings will be on the increase, including solid photographic evidence. We stated that mass sightings involving large groups of people would likewise be on the increase. That this has almost become the norm is now obvious from reports. Why are lights in the sky most often the introduction, the initiation route, informing anxious humans that there is more to life than the dreary drudgery of their day-to-day? More to anticipate than an aging body and a burden of bills that seem to become ever heavier. More to control events around the world than a few power-mad politicians or heavy-handed dictators. Man is not alone, and his small world is about to burst into the arena of introduction to life from other worlds, like a child dragged from a dark closet into a well-lit room, engaged in a riotous party. Lights in the sky were the introductory mode because they invariably represent, to the common man, a distance, a safety barrier from the intrusion into their quiet life, crawling about on the surface of their world. This rapid increase in mass sightings and photographic proof at this time has a purpose, as man is about to have his world torn apart by the coming pole shift. The helping hands extended at that time may not, in fact, be hands. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then on February 7th, a second occurrence of the Phoenix Lights occurred. And I quote, Mysterious lights spotted over Phoenix again, February 7th, 2007. Nearly a decade after the highly publicized Phoenix light phenomenon, more strange lights have appeared in the night sky over downtown Phoenix. Mysterious lights lit up the western skies over Phoenix, and soon after, phones began ringing off the hook at radio, television, and police stations from witnesses wondering what the lights were. Back in March of 1997, a huge object was spotted over parts of Arizona that many witnesses believed to be an extraterrestrial spaceship that was drifting slowly and silently over the region. End of the quote from CBS. This was declared to be flares from a nearby military base, but the public was skeptical. And I quote, Flares hang in the same place for 4 minutes? The military is lighting up targets over a populated area to target? Did anyone hear explosions? One flare at least that moves from right to left. Something does not add up here. End of the quote. I too looked at the videos and noted that these could not be flares. For one thing, after the lineup of flares hung motionless, a last flare appeared on the far right and traveled rapidly all the way across the others to the far left. Was wind drift treating those supposed flares differently, affecting one but not the others? A quick check of the videos from the March 13, 1997 event and the recent February 7, 2007 event shows they look remarkably similar. And almost exactly a decade later, at the anniversary, surely this was a sign. The Zetas detailed just what people were being warned about. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Phoenix Lights, written February 10, 2007. The St. Lawrence Seaway is stretching, a fact noted by Nancy for months lately, as the Black Hills have been wobbly on the live seismographs. On days when the rest of the world is quiet, the Black Hills stand alone, showing its wobble, occurring in 12-hour intervals in accordance with the tugging on the highly magnetized Atlantic Rift by Planet X, which wants this surface magnet to stay in alignment with itself. The yawing seaway rumples the land in the Black Hills, which is why this land looks like it was thrown in the air recently, as it was during the last pole shift and in pole shifts prior. Is Chicago exempt from the stretch? Where cities on either side of the seaway will find they are merely riding along, it's where the stretch is ripping land anew that violence will occur. Lake Michigan is a clue. Why do you suppose the Wisconsin Peninsula formed? Its land was secured to the west, the weak point ripping the land under Lake Michigan, and this rip ending at the Chicago area. End of the quote by Zeta Talk. The Zetas had long warned about the seaway stretching and the rumpled land in the Black Hills. From the safe locations material on the Zeta Talk website, I quote about Montreal. Because the tearing of the St. Lawrence Seaway will begin as soon as the stretching of the Atlantic occurs, land along the seaway will not submerge, nor will any noticeable influx of ocean water occur, as the influx will be filling the new riverbed area, now to become more of a lake. The tear will occur primarily where the St. Lawrence Seaway now runs, as this is a low point only because of the existing tear. Weak spots are deep within the rock strata under the riverbed, and the tearing is less of a deep rift than a pulling apart in many places, so the surface seems relatively smooth. Beneath this tear are many feathery fingers of rock, reaching toward each other, soon filled with hardened magma to solidify. Thus, even though Montreal is surrounded by water, it will simply find itself more of an island than another Atlantis. And another on Toronto. Toronto, Canada, is situated on the edge of high drama that will occur during the pole shift. Those of faint heart are advised to move inland for the duration of the drama. The St. Lawrence Seaway is due to further its split during the shift, widening the seaway to what will become an ocean bay. During the split, the bordering land will not sink. The release of tension of connectedness to place in the Atlantic will be stretched and drawn downward as the Atlantic widens. And then when the rip occurs, the lands bordering the seaway will bob up somewhat. However, this action will be heart-stopping. In general, this section of Canada, as all of Canada, will have a good climate in the aftertime, a temperate climate. And more on the Finger Lakes in New York. The Finger Lakes, created when the land was stretched during the creating of the St. Lawrence Seaway in the past, will, if anything, deepen, allowing the water levels to temporarily drop when the St. Lawrence Seaway once again is pulled apart. And regarding the Black Hills in North Dakota, a widening seaway also does not affect just those land masses bordering the seaway, as buckling occurs inland and afar. What does man assume caused the Black Hills to be so rumpled, with the appearance of a recent bucking and heaving? This is the center of a land plate. The tearing of the seaway does not end at Duluth, Minnesota. It travels underground to South Dakota. And regarding Chicago, lying deep under the city of Chicago are aqueducts put in place by man, as well as many channels above ground, which connected in one manner or another Lake Michigan and the rivers to the south. Man has built these, and man will suffer when the waters go on the move. Man-made barricades will crumble, and the worst nightmares will ensue. End of the quotes from Zeta Talk. That explains the UFO over O'Hare. The people of Chicago were being warned. When the New Madrid and associated fault lines finally go, things might not be well in Chicago. And what about the next warning, those UFOs in Istanbul? And I quote again from Zeta Talk. We've stated that Africa is turning in place, its base at South Africa firmly nailed and unable to move, the top rolling to the east as the Atlantic yaws open. This action is what is causing the African rift to spread so rapidly in the Afar Triangle, where huge crevasses appear before astonished eyes and the land is dropping hundreds of feet. The Mediterranean will be destabilized. The African plate is a straight line across the top, and when it turns, it will create a yaw in the Mediterranean, causing volcanoes in the area to become active as lava is exposed to the surface, and certainly destabilizing countries to the north of the fault line, dissecting the Mediterranean from east to west. The Mediterranean in the past was a swamp, but now is a sea. What caused the land to drop? The Black Sea participated in this drop, being inundated where formerly land was above water. Istanbul lies at the center of the area that will be first affected when a serious role of Africa occurs. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The fact that this region leading into the Black Sea and the Black Sea itself were at once at a much higher elevation is no secret, as geologists are aware. But where much is discussed about how water flooded into the Black Sea from the Mediterranean, there is scant discussion about why the land dropped in the first place. And I quote from the Washington Post, article dated November 18, 1999, "For Noah's Flood, a New Wave of Evidence." Scientists have discovered an ancient coastline 550 feet below the surface of the Black Sea, providing dramatic new evidence of a sudden catastrophic flood around 7,500 years ago, the possible source of the Old Testament story of Noah. A team of deep-sea explorers this summer captured the first sonar image of a gentle berm and a sandbar submerged, undisturbed for thousands of years on the seafloor. Now, using radiocarbon dating techniques, analysts have shown that the remains of freshwater mollusks, subsequently dredged from the ancient beach, date back the 7,500 years and saltwater species began showing up 6,900 years ago. The flood may have triggered massive migrations to destinations as diverse as Egypt, Western Europe, and Central Asia, an idea that has provoked some academic controversy. Scholars also question whether any natural disaster could be conclusively identified as the inspiration for the story of Noah's flood. Biblical scholars date the writing of the book of Genesis, from which the story of Noah is taken, at some time between 2,900 and 2,400 years ago, and a similar event is described in the Mesopotamian Gilgamesh legend, written about 3,600 years ago. And regardless of the historical content, the science of the Black Sea flood stands undisputed. Ryan and Pittman dated the event at 7,600 years ago, and they fixed the likely depth of the ancient coastline almost exactly where the Ballard found it. If wooden ships can survive in the Black Sea's depths, then so can trees. The bottom would look like a forest. End of the quote. Note the dates mentioned. The Black Sea was flooded, is estimated 7,500 years ago. The 6,300-year passage of Planet X times 2 equals 7,200 years ago. And the Gilgamesh was written 3,600 years ago. Other archaeologists report finding cities on the Mediterranean floor itself. And I quote from an Associated Press article dated June 3, 2000, "Last Pharaoh Cities of the Deep." Archaeologists scouring the Mediterranean seabed announced Saturday that they have found the 2,500-year-old ruins of a submerged pharaoh city that until now was known only through Greek tragedies, travelogues, and legends. Among the stunning discoveries are remarkably preserved houses, temples, port infrastructures, and colossal statues that stand testimony to the citizens' luxuriant lifestyle, which some travelers have described as decadent. This is the first time that historians have found physical evidence of the existence of the lost cities, which were famous not only for their riches and arts, but also for numerous temples dedicated to the gods Isis, Serapis, and Osiris, making the region an important pilgrimage destination for various cults. The team worked for 2 years off this city on Egypt's northern coast in waters 20 to 30 feet deep, using modern technology, including the use of magnetic waves to map the area. Numerous ancient texts speak of the importance of the region in the cities before they were covered up by the sea, probably after an earthquake, indicated by the position of collapsed columns and walls. They had all fallen systematically in one direction. The sea encroached on the land after the quake, and ruins are now about 4 miles from land in the Bay of Abu Kir. The destruction most likely happened in the 7th or 8th centuries BC. Divers found Islamic and Byzantine coins and jewelry from that period, but none more recent. End of the quote. The Mediterranean dropped, even at the edge of Egypt. That explains the UFOs in Istanbul giving a warning. And what about those UFOs in Hawaii? And I quote again from Zeta Talk. We have stated that the Great Pacific is not one plate, as assumed, but numerous, uncharted by man who cannot plumb its depths. We have stated that Hawaii will rise during the coming shift, as the plate it is on is pushed up while others subduct, thus giving Hawaii added protection from volcanic explosions, as their volcanoes will ooze, not explode. But Hawaii will be subject to tsunami, aplenty, devastating its coastlines. Thus UFO sightings there, among those frolicking in the surf, are a warning. London also is in this stretch zone, as its many derailing tube trains attest. Any significant adjustment of the yawing Atlantic will result in further land pulls under London, and suddenly so. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Zetas also addressed Hawaii in the safe locations documentation on the Zeta Talk website, but here is good news in the main. Hawaii will rise during the pole shift, but being in the middle of the Pacific, which will shorten, tsunami aplenty can be expected. And the Zetas have long warned of this, warning of tidal bore. And I quote from the safe locations documentation on Hawaii, where one would expect that the Hawaiian Islands would be awash with tidal waves, and under the threat of nearby volcanic eruption, there is a bright spot for these islands in that the Pacific will be shortening, tightening, and all shores that represent plates above subducting plates will benefit from this. During the rotation stoppage, the waters of the Pacific will flow toward the poles, and during the shift will rush from one side of the Pacific to the next. However, due to the shortening of the Pacific, there will be slightly more water to deal with overall. The highest altitudes will be the safest, with a tie down to survive the hurricane force winds. Tidal bore is present when the water has nowhere to go but up. This happens when a large wave approaches a cliff, along a landmass that prevents the water from any escape. For instance, along the western coast of Peru. Water must then either push sideways, encountering water under just as much pressure, or back, likewise not possible given the press. Thus, the least resistance is up a ravine. In the case of islands like those in Hawaii, there is wiggle room. Even though the islands are large, the wave approaching the island starts to move around the island long before it starts rolling up the landmass toward the beaches. The water on either side of the island has a lot of options, can move sideways, and does so. Thus, the advice to move inland 100 miles and upland 200 feet is not that far afield. Clearly, one should move as high as possible, staying out of the hurricane force winds, and not hang about near the beaches, even if on high ground. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And what about all those UFO sightings in Arkansas? Does this have something to do with the pending New Madrid adjustment? And I quote again from Zeta Talk. We've stated that the New Madrid is under stress, pulling apart not only from the east to west, but pulling the North American continent in a diagonal, the New England states moving in a northeast direction, while Mexico is pulled to the southwest. This will do more than rip every fault line from Mexico to Ontario. It will reduce the support under land to the west of the Mississippi, dropping this land in elevation and flooding it. Arkansas, in the Ozark, will find itself suddenly land that many seek in their panic. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Quake swarms in the interior of the U.S. along the New Madrid fault line and on up through Ohio and into New England have been on the increase. a fact easily lost on the general public unless they are much on the internet and seeing the pattern. The authorities have recently begun holding conferences discussing readiness for such a quake in the interior. Old brick cities, never retrofitted for quakes as cities on the West Coast have been encouraged to do. And I quote, New Madrid region urging readiness for the big one. Dated March 14, 2006. All this talk about an area of northeastern Arkansas being overdue for a devastating earthquake is making Pigott Mayor Gerald Morris nervous. His town of 3,900 sits on the edge of what researchers say is the most active seismic zone in the U.S. east of the Rockies. The New Madrid seismic zone produces hundreds of small earthquakes each year. Most can't even be felt. Mr. Patterson is a geologist and information services director with the Center for Earthquake Research and Information in Memphis, Tennessee. He and others had been warning for years that the New Madrid Fault Zone, which zigzags from northeast Arkansas to southern Illinois, will see a major earthquake that could cause horrific damage in an area not used to such disaster. The New Madrid Zone produced what experts say were the worst earthquakes in recorded history in North America, at least three and maybe as many as five monsters in the winter of 1811 to 12 that literally changed the landscape of the region. Those earthquakes have been estimated at magnitude 7 or greater. It's difficult to determine exactly how large the affected area would be, officials say. Mr. Patterson said that is partly because the geology of the region is different from that on the West Coast and would result in an earthquake having a much stronger effect. Unlike those on the West Coast, most buildings, highways, and bridges in the region weren't built to withstand earthquakes. And a major earthquake probably would disrupt communications throughout the region, making response more difficult. Many of the preparations that can be taken have been. Most states in the region have or are adopting stricter building codes for new construction. Arkansas did so in the 1990s. Many schools in eastern Arkansas and elsewhere have reinforced areas for students to take shelter in during either an earthquake or tornado. There is an earthquake education in schools in some of the states. Tennessee officials are retrofitting the Mississippi River bridges that connect Memphis to eastern Arkansas to allow it to slide with the shock from an earthquake. In Pigott, Mayor Morris has urged residents to stockpile first aid kits and at least a week's worth of food, water, and other supplies. Most of New Madrid, Missouri was destroyed in 1811 to 12. Some islands in the Mississippi River sank, and lakes were formed in some places and drained in others. Survivors reported cracks in the earth's surface and the ground rolling in visible waves. The river's course changed, and it even flowed backward briefly, with huge waves collapsing boats and drowning their occupants. Damage was reported as far away as Charleston, South Carolina, and Washington, D.C., and the shaking caused church bells to ring in Boston. End of the quote. The Zetas have warned that the New Madrid and associated fault lines will give, and soon. This is because the North American plate is locked at the top, so the North American plate cannot roll in place. Thus, as the Atlantic stretches open and the Pacific compresses, the entire continent is pulled at a diagonal. And I quote from Zeta Talk, North American Rip, written February 10, 2006. The giant plates of North America and Eurasia are locked against each other, unable to rotate against each other due to their shape. Slip slide along the West Coast, measured as a creep by geologists, is due only to slight adjustments along that edge of the plate, primarily due to adjustments within the small plates to the west of the North American plate, which move to accommodate pressure. The North American plate does not move, per se, but other dramas occur. We explained, months before it expressed enough to show up on the IRIS charts, the Earth's torque caused to the North Pole continues to rotate to the east, while the South Pole was held back by Planet X, tending to open the globe like a jar of pickles. This creates a diagonal stress on the North American continent, where New England is pulled to the east, while Mexico is pulled to the west. So the New Madrid is put under slip-slide stress, where one half, east of the Mississippi, will move toward the northeast, while the other, west of the Mississippi, moves toward the southwest. The virtual hook of land in the North American continent near the Kamchatka Peninsula is solid rock and will not snap off to become a separate land plate, nor would this ease the deadlock along the North American and Eurasian plates even if it did. These massive plates cannot move. The stress on the North American plate will resolve by ripping the St. Lawrence Seaway open, pulling the southeast down into the crumbling Caribbean and into the widening Atlantic. As neither of these sinking fronts will be able to support the edge of the weighty North American plate. There is pressure along the west coast, of course, and as the North American plate confronts the compressing Pacific, this will only result in the predictable volcanic increases and west coast earthquakes. But the primary drama preceding the pole shift will be the ripping action that a plate unable to move must endure. The notable area of catastrophe during this is the eastern half of the continental U.S. From Houston to Chicago to New England, the diagonal pole will tear the underpinnings of cities and create a catastrophe for the U.S. that will make the New Orleans disaster appear trivial. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. This certainly explains the UFO sightings in Arkansas. Those folks need to be warned about the coming New Madrid adjustment. And those UFO sightings in the Carolinas? Remember that discussion about the 1811-12 New Madrid quake? That, and I quote, "damage was reported as far away as Charleston, South Carolina, and Washington, D.C., and the shaking caused church bells to ring in Boston." End of the quote. Why was there damage in Charleston and Washington, D.C., but not in the cities that lay between the New Madrid and these cities? Why not Nashville or Knoxville, Tennessee? Why not Asheville, North Carolina? The reason is due to where other North American plate fault lines lie. There's a fault line running from the Gulf up through Florida, right along the East Coast, right through Charleston and Washington, D.C., and on up. I can recall visiting Charleston and seeing the buildings bolted from one side to the other, long metal poles sticking through the buildings, bolted on both ends. These were to stabilize these old buildings after the 1811-12 quakes destabilized them. So why were the Carolinas warned during the recent UFO blitz? I quote again from Zeta Talk. The Carolinas were affected by the New Madrid quake, buildings needing to be stabilized, even though the Rocky Appalachian Mountains were not so affected. Why is this? There is a fault line running from the Gulf up along the eastern seaboard, and this will certainly participate in any New Madrid adjustments. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And the Phoenix Lights? What on earth can be pending for Arizona, assumed to be hard, desert rock, very stable, and well above the sea level that needs to worry about a rising sea? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Phoenix Lights, written February 10, 2007. And why the anniversary blitz of Phoenix Lights? Is not the flat, dry desert of Arizona expected to remain relatively undisturbed during the coming pole shift? When the New Madrid adjusts, Mexico will be too far to the west for the current comfort of the west coast, which will bow in the Southern California and Arizona region. The fault line that runs along Mexico's west coast runs just under the Arizona border, then on up along the west coast of California. Before the west coast of the U.S. starts adjusting to the new position of Mexico, with slip-slide adjustments, there will be a bending of the Arizona desert area. This will fracture the dry soil, create a breach in the Great Colorado River Dam, and allow magma to rise in the calderas of the U.S., Mammoth Lake in California, and Yellowstone. If the Hoover Dam breaks, wither the city of Phoenix, which lies on flat land and near farmland irrigated by the waters of the Colorado. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.